Welcome, everyone, to episode 27 of the Premier Pod. I'm your host, Yash Bika, joined by my co-host, Tyler Chan. We've got a special episode packed for you guys. First of all, we got to mention the crazy Champions League game that we just witnessed. Manchester United beating PSG in Paris 3-3 on an aggregate scoreline, but United winning 3-1 after Rashford scored the game-winning penalty off a VAR penalty given. Crazy match. I was screaming. As every United fan out there, I was screaming. My lungs were out. But Tyler, give us more of an objective view on this game, because I couldn't control myself.
Well, PSG, I would say, shot themselves in the foot, because Buffon, he did not have a very good game. United only had 4 shots on target. And of those 4 shots, they scored 3 of them. And Buffon, for the first 2 goals, he didn't really do too well in trying to clear the ball or pair it out from a Rashford shot, especially in the second chance. And then the third goal United got, that was just straight VAR, just giving them a bone right there. I would say it was still a penalty, in my opinion, because it did hit Kimpembe in the arm.
Hand, even though his back was turned, I thought his hand was kind of in an awkward position, not in a normal position if you're just playing, you know, just turning around.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, rules are rules, and code of conduct. So yeah, they gave him the penalty, and Rashford actually took it away.
And for this match, it was really crazy because United came in with, I think, pretty much more than half of their first team squad injured. If you saw the subs, they were basically all academy players. At the end, they added in Tadic Chong and Mason Greenwood, both academy players. Mm-hmm. And then McTominay was in the midfield. They basically played McTominay, Fred, and Pereira. They're not even their first choice midfielders in that midfield. And then their strikers, it was just basically Lukaku and Rashford had to do all the attacking work. Ashley Young had to come up from right back and basically play as a right winger at times. But then Eric Bailly got injured still. That's another injury into the United front. But Diego Dalot had to come in and basically play right winger again. So it was just a crazy performance considering the amount of injuries, the suspensions. I mean, this was basically United's second team against one of the best teams in Europe in PSG, and they somehow managed to do it. So all I got to say is Ole has done enough to, I think, get the job. I mean, it would be heartbreaking if he didn't get the job at this point.
Mm-hmm. And PSG, they had a lot of players on the bench.
Oh, they had so many chances.
Yeah, it was a classic FIFA match, in my opinion, where basically PSG was dominant for most of the game. They had many chances.
The rain, I thought, played a big factor in that because mm-hmm. Mbappe, to start off the game, it wasn't really that rainy to start off the match, and Mbappe's touches were really, really good. And he still had some great touches in the second half, but Mbappe, so many times during that game, either misplaced the kick or could not like, you know, get the ball under his feet, and just was really, the touch was not there for him in this game. Yeah. Towards the end of it because of the rain, because the ball just kept going everywhere. And we just saw that with a bunch of the other PSG players.
That's like a Klopp answer. What happened? It was windy. But somehow, some way.
Lukaku, 2 goals. I got to pull out this stat I saw on Twitter. The first time since 2006, Ronaldo was the last player to score 2 goals in 3 successive matches. That's a long time. And Ronaldo was the last person to do it. And Lukaku has done it in back-to-back Premier League games and now in the Champions League games. He's definitely come up, and he's definitely shown that he's worth his money for United right now.
I was also a little surprised that they didn't play Cavani. Like, PSG did not start Cavani.
They brought him on basically in the 90th minute.
Mm-hmm. And that didn't really do anything. So,
it's interesting because I know this is not the Champions League podcast, but, you know, Real Madrid lose, and all of a sudden their manager's up in the air. PSG lose, and looks like Thomas Tuchel could be out of a job. Mm-hmm. So Jose Mourinho could end up somewhere at PSG or Real Madrid somehow. So it's funny how the world works like that.
Bro, I was not expecting that. Even we'd see players on the field that were not expecting this result as well, like Neymar. He was off the field.
He was off the field coming off. You thought he was going to win, and mm-hmm. then his face was just, he couldn't believe it. Yeah.
And then Ninja was there too. It was a weird game. But I can't believe PSG didn't capitalize on the advantage they had going into this game.
Every right to go out ahead and win this game, but it was just sloppy play by PSG. Mm-hmm. And credit to United, they took their chances when they had them. They didn't have that many, but clinical finishing by the strikers, Rashford mm-hmm. and Lukaku.
And they're also very stout defense, because if you look at the entire Manchester United defense, they're very compact. The entire team was like a huge rectangle that was just surrounding the goal box the entire game whenever PSG was on the attack.
I saw McTominay's stats. He had 4, I think he had 5 successful tackles. I mean, that's insane. And his pass accuracy was 100% in the final third. So him and Fred did an excellent job in that midfield. But we mentioned VAR. I believe VAR is going to get implemented in the Premier League next season, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, correct. It's going to be implemented then. But the game that needed VAR was the Arsenal-Tottenham game. And if you didn't watch it, I know it was an early game on Saturday, but, man, there were some two questionable penalty calls. The first one for Tottenham, Harry Kane's VAR penalty, the penalty that was given to Tottenham in that game, Harry Kane was offsides, but Mustafi pushed him down, and it was awarded a penalty. But it shouldn't have been awarded a penalty because Harry Kane was offsides to start off with. And then Aubameyang's penalty at the end, kind of a softer penalty, should have probably not been called. But as Aubameyang was taking it, Vertonghen basically was offsides. So some crazy things that happened in that game. So it kind of those two incidents just kind of reassured me that VAR is definitely needed in the Premier League, because there's just too many errors in a fast-paced game such as soccer, where there's too many things are going to be happening that you need VAR to help out the referees.
I felt like the Arsenal penalty was like a makeup call, because I would not have given that as a penalty. But also, it should have been retaken when Aubameyang was
Vertonghen was basically right there.
Yeah, because Vertonghen basically encroached into the goal box as Aubameyang was making his run.
He made the saving tackle once Lloris saved it and Arsenal tried to get the ball in. He was the one that made the tackle.
Yeah, so like, the second Aubameyang had his penalty saved, Lloris paired it to his right side, and then there was an Arsenal player ready to cross it back in. But Vertonghen, because he ran in early, was able to position himself to where he could block off any player that was going to receive this pass. And he blocked off Aubameyang from receiving the pass and stopped a goal. So I felt like Tottenham got away with this one.
Yeah, especially I believe throughout the game, I thought Arsenal kind of outplayed Tottenham for most periods of the game. And then the first goal, Aaron Ramsey had a sweet goal where he just went around Lloris and scored an absolute stunner right there. But overall, I thought Arsenal outplayed Tottenham, and Tottenham just got really lucky with that penalty call, because there were times when Arsenal were on the attack, and, you know, Aubameyang and also Lacazette had a couple chances to score. But this is also a big result for Pochettino, because back-to-back Premier League losses, they draw against Arsenal, but that past result, they just beat Dortmund, so they're into the quarterfinals of the Champions League. So a much-needed week for Tottenham after some poor results in the Premier League.
And somehow Harry Kane managed to score, like,
yes,
some way, somehow, in his 7th out of 8th derby against Arsenal. So some way, he always finds a way to score. But I think Arsenal, they could have gotten 3 points pretty easily, but the refs, and like, it just got a little unlucky there.
Do you think this is a good turning point for Unai Emery's squad, I guess, going into the latter end of the stages? Because they play United. We're going to preview that game, obviously. But this is a big result for them, because they obviously need a result. And Unai Emery has been performing decently well as Arsenal manager. And with him kind of outperforming Pochettino, I think times are turning for Arsenal.
I think this is not a turning point for Arsenal, because so far in this past month of February, and then now since we're in March, Arsenal have actually been doing pretty well in their games. They've been recently getting a lot of wins, like how we saw in the last actual season in like the winter and fall, when we saw them win like 10 games in a row, 11 games in a row.
Wow, that feels so long ago.
Felt a long time ago.
Strike.
But now we're starting to see them like pick up the pace again, even with Aubameyang starting this game on the bench.
Yeah, it looks
like they had options.
Yeah, it looks like Emery, you know, Ozil was also on the bench too, but it looks like Emery has kind of favored only playing one of those strikers. So it'll really be a big offseason for Arsenal's board if they decide to sell Aubameyang or Lacazette, one of those two. If, you know, if Emery's only going to play one of them, there's no point in keeping a superstar on the bench like that all the time.
So this will be also a big test for Arsenal, because now they're going to the next weekend against Manchester United. So I don't know if this will be a momentum boost for them. Would you consider this a momentum boost?
I think it's more of a heartbreak.
A heartbreak, yeah.
Because they outplayed Tottenham, like I said, and just losing, just drawing 1-1, especially after the penalty was given. I was talking to one of my Arsenal fans, and he said he would have been fine with the draw if the penalty didn't come. But it was just classic Arsenal not to put the penalty away and win this game and finish it 1-1. So that's just the psyche for Arsenal fans right now.
I will say, though, that they were away at Wembley, so getting a point from their derby rivals, that is still a big point to get. So there's two ways to look at it. It is heartbreak because they didn't get the victory despite dominating, but just as we saw in the United versus PSG game today, you just got to get your chances.
For sure, and you just got to take them. But going on to a a game where both teams didn't really take their chances. Everton versus Liverpool in the Merseyside derby.
Oh my gosh.
I know Tyler and I debated on this game. We both thought that with Merseyside derbies, they've been very underwhelming. Nothing's really happened. I think I predicted 1-1 at that point, but it was a very low scoreline. But I don't know. I thought this game was a lot more entertaining than previous Merseyside derbies. Sure, the quality wasn't there in the final third, but the intensity in the midfield by both teams was there. And Liverpool just looked very out of it. The front three were very sloppy with the ball, but especially Mohamed Salah. He gave up the ball so many times, and his touch was really, really bad. I remember there's one instance where he was one-on-one against Jordan Pickford, and instead of using his right foot, obviously he's very left-foot dominant, but he decides to curl one past Pickford instead of, you know, trying to slide it beneath his legs, and Pickford saves it, and I think that was probably the turning point of the game for Everton.
What I saw in this game that Liverpool lacked the most was a creative player, a player that can help make plays out of nothing. Because so far this season and also last season, Liverpool have been very reliant on their front three with Firmino, Mane, and Salah. Although Firmino didn't start this game, he got subbed on in the second half, so they started Origi first and had Mane as a center forward. But even then, there were some opportunities that Liverpool got within the first 25 minutes where Salah was through on goal, one-on-one, and there were some opportunities that he got this game where if it was last season's Mohamed Salah, it would for sure be a goal. But this season, he hasn't been as clinical, and he's been in a long string of just poor form.
It's weird. I know I was listening to the Two Robbies podcast. Shout out to them. But, you know, they always mention that the front three for Liverpool have never clicked together all season. Basically, all season long, all three of them have not been in form. It's either Mane's had his run at form for a couple games, Salah's been in form for 8 games, then Firmino has his try at 2 games. But really, they just haven't been collectively as a group in form like they were last season, and I think that's hurt them. And we saw Firmino was on the bench for this game. Origi was started.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that. I think Firmino just needs to start because he's their best option right now. But it's kind of worrying that we're heading into 9 games into the season now, and their front three still has yet to connect. And we've been saying this all season, like, oh, we just got to give them time. They'll finally click, but still haven't clicked together, and it's still worrying for me that their front three can't get anything going.
Mm-hmm. And there is like a little bit of issue in that Klopp, his substitutions did not make as big of an impact. He subbed on Milner for Wijnaldum. He subbed on Firmino for Origi.
And Lallana came on. I thought Lallana actually played pretty decently when he came on.
He was decent, but there's players on the bench like Shaqiri and Keita. Those two players are very creative. Lallana is a very creative player, but
Keita's on another level.
Keita right now, despite me roasting him for the entire month of January, he's becoming a lot better. And I was a little confused why he didn't start this game, actually, because although Keita is a very creative player, he can also do some defensive duties. So he can be like basically a pure CM, like a center midfield, where he can
box to box.
Yeah, box to box. But also find that one pass to get through the Everton defense.
And that's really
what we're really missing this game.
For sure. And, you know, starting midfield of Fabinho, Henderson, and Wijnaldum, it's good. But Wijnaldum's kind of their only attacking, that box to box that can actually do something in the attacking third.
Mm-hmm.
But Klopp subbed him off. I just don't understand why would you sub off the one guy that could finally do something that you were asking for, that creativeness. Because when he was at Newcastle, he played as a number 10.
Mm-hmm. And also, we saw that when Wijnaldum was not on the field, they were even more reliant on the front three to create their own chances and to finish. But the second that Wijnaldum was put back into the team, he was able to make those lagging runs where the front three would move forward, and then if they needed to have someone pass back to finish from like a layoff or something, then they had Wijnaldum to, you know, get the header or get like the one-touch finish.
And, you know, with Keita or Wijnaldum, what they do best is even if they're playing in the midfield, they at least try to make a run, you know, towards the center of the box or towards, you know, the final third of the pitch. And when you do that, you know, that drags other defenders out of play, so it gives more space for Firmino, Salah, and Mane. And, you know, with the very defensive midfielder that they have with Fabinho, Henderson, and, you know, whoever they decide to stick in there.
You know, like Milner every once in a while, too.
You know, those guys are not going to – they're really great midfielders, but they're not going to make the crazy Paul Pogba runs into the box. They're just going to sit back and try to hover around that middle area, which is fine. But when you do that, you're basically requiring Salah, Firmino, and Mane to basically do their magic every game, and that's just not possible because teams are smart. You know, they're going to find a way to stop Salah and going to stop Firmino and stop Mane. You may have that game where Mane hits a back heel, like a crazy back heel, but realistically, it's hard to do that unless you have help from your midfielders.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to take anything away from the defense, too. Like, this game...
Oh, they needed him badly.
Like, this game, basically, Van Dijk had to put the team on his back.
Yeah.
He had to stop, basically, majority of the chances that Everton had just on his own. Yeah. And luckily, because of him and Alisson and Matip, Matip had a very good game as well.
Dude, Matip was basically that driving midfielder. He made a couple of runs where he just went right into the final box. I was like, whoa.
And some of our best opportunities for Liverpool came because of Matip, which is unexpected. But, man, this is completely different from Liverpool's situation from last year, in that last year they had defensive liabilities and they didn't really have trouble scoring. But this point of the year, now they have trouble scoring, but their defense has been what's keeping them in games.
Yeah, I thought Van Dijk obviously had a brilliant game. I was talking with somebody. There's got to be – it's very few players in the world where a center back, at least, if you put Van Dijk, I think, in every Premier League team, honestly, they'd probably be 10 times better. Even if you put him on City, imagine how good City would be, considering how good they are right now. Van Dijk, is a special player because he's so good, you know, defensively and with the ball. So, really, Liverpool, when they bought him, he's fixed all their defensive problems in a way, and it's just crazy to think one player has fixed everything for Liverpool defensively.
Liverpool needs one of those kind of impact players to just lead the defense, but they also need someone to lead the attack right now, because right now they're struggling. And there is one player, I think, that will be coming back from injury after a long time that Alex I think will make a big impact, and that would be Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Is he actually going to be fit, though, for any games this season?
He is in the Champions League squad.
Wow.
So,
oh my goodness. It's possible. It's been so long since I've seen him.
It's been a very long time. Last time he played
was against
City in the Champions League last season.
This time last year, right?
Yeah, this time last year. Maybe around March.
Month later, yeah.
Well, actually, no, it's March now. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness. It's been so long since we've seen him play. But, you know, adding him into the squad, I mean, he would fit so well in this midfield right now because he would have the cover from Fabinho or Henderson to make those runs into the final third. So I think he'll be a really big bonus into that Liverpool midfield right now.
It'd be a fourth attacker that Liverpool could use. Although he's not a pure striker or a pure creative midfielder, he has, like, this dynamism that no one else on the team really has.
He's just a unique player.
He's a very unique player.
In that he's not good at... He's not very good at, like, one thing. He's basically good at pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And if you stick him in there, he'll have a game where he's just like, whoa, this guy's world class.
Mm-hmm. And he'll make teams have to decide who to defend because he has the ability to take a long shot, take a chance out of nothing, or just run past the defense because he is very fast. So just having him on the field just makes it a little more difficult for other teams to really know how to really – set up their team tactically and defensively against Liverpool. So that's something. But despite that, I think this summer, Liverpool do have to bring in, like, a pure striker, in my opinion. Like a Timo Werner. Because right now...
You've been saying that name forever.
I've been saying Timo Werner for a long time. But they really need someone who can just come off the bench or start from that will guarantee them a goal, something.
That's crazy, because I remember speaking to you, I guess, last season or just any time before, you were pretty comfortable just having Firmino up as a front striker, but I definitely agree with you. I've been kind of saying this for a long time. I just think Firmino's good, and he's very, very good. And honestly, if you get a pure striker, you can honestly stick Firmino in that midfield because the way how creative he is. But I definitely agree with you because they're really lacking that pure goal scorer. Like, United have Lukaku and Rashford. You know, what would a Lukaku and Rashford both do at Liverpool when they could just be fed opportunities all the time? And when you have a pure striker, it takes pressure off literally everyone to score the goals.
Mm-hmm. And also, Liverpool don't really have a pure striker they can rely on.
They stick Salah, but he's more of a false nine than an actual striker.
And right now, this past couple games, they've stuck Mane there. So it's like, Origi has not been...
not really hit the strides.
He's not been fulfilling the potential
You can't really rely on Sturridge anymore.
Sturridge was supposed to be...
That backup super sub.
The backup super sub that
was... pretty decent early in the season, but it's kind of fell off.
Mm-hmm. He's become like West Brom Sturridge loan version, so... I don't know. But I'm also curious to see if Klopp will actually give Ryan Brewster a chance. He is the academy product that has been getting a lot of praise in the U17, U21 leagues and U23 leagues. And he's been showing a lot of great promise. He did get injured at the beginning of the season, but now he's back as well. He's been training with Oxlade-Chamberlain, become good friends. But I'm curious to see if he can be that impact player, because if he gets a chance and he, you know, makes use of it like Rashford did back in the days when he started, he could be that missing player, that missing striker that Liverpool could rely on. But even then, right now, having to rely on Firmino is not a bad thing. It's just like they don't have that many options. And Firmino, in Klopp's system, he's able to feed Salah and feed Mane whenever they have to. And he's really good at that. But as a goal scorer, he's not, in my opinion, like a pure striker. He's more like a center forward, where he's like a hybrid between a center attacking mid and a striker.
Yeah, he's kind of a Wayne Rooney in a sense, because Wayne Rooney was never a pure striker, but he was never a pure number 10. Mm-hmm. He was just a very weird player. You really don't know how to play him. But we'll see what Liverpool kind of do with that. And with that draw, Liverpool have now bounced all the way down to second place. All the way down. It's a pretty big drop off from first to second. Mm-hmm. 70 points. They are 1 point below, one point below Manchester City, who are sitting at 71 after they picked up a win against Bournemouth. Biggest thing for them, De Bruyne came off injured. I believe it's a hamstring injury right now, and I just feel really sad for him because really he's not been able to kick on at all this entire season. He's basically been off and on when it comes to injuries. But with his injury, they bring on Riyad Mahrez, so not a bad person to bring on after a sub. And that just speaks about the depth and quality in the Manchester City squad. No other team in Europe, I think, can even match the depth City have right now. The fact that they can just bring on Mahrez after losing De Bruyne. Yeah. I mean, bringing on Riyad Mahrez, and he ended up scoring the winner in the Bournemouth game. But really, City had control of this entire game. It was more of, you know, City just couldn't take their chances. Got a 1-0 win. But I was speaking this with my friends. You mentioned this before. You think Liverpool play a little bit better when they're trailing or when they have to hunt rather than being the hunted.
Yes. I usually, because Liverpool have been in that situation for majority of the last decade, basically. And they're a little bit more used to that situation. While City, more recently, they are more used to being the hunted.
I think they like being the hunted.
Yeah, they like being the hunted. So now it's like both teams, Manchester City and Liverpool, are in their, I guess, ideal positions. Although Liverpool, in my opinion, I'd rather see him at first most of the time, but now it's just a little nerve-wracking.
You know what's crazy? You remember when they played Manchester City around December or January, December in the, you know, Christmas fixtures? If they beat Manchester City during that game, they would have gone, 12 points? Was it 9? They would have gone 12 points above City. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy to think City have crept up and crept up and crept up and now – in first place, 1 point ahead of Liverpool. I mean, it's just amazing, this title race right now.
But also, Liverpool have dropped around 11 points.
West Ham, Leicester, then United, Everton. They've dropped a lot of points. A lot of mistakes on Liverpool's end, but, man, they had a perfect opportunity to go 12 points ahead. I think it will be one of the turning points of the season, that game. Game of the season for me, at least. I don't care what other game comes, but that game really capitalized or really capitulated, you know, just the entire Liverpool scene. But you know what's crazy? In Manchester City's fixture list, they actually have to play United in the Manchester Derby. So it could come down that Liverpool fans might actually have to cheer for United to stop the City train.
I'll cheer for United. I'll do it. But the thing is that now the issue is that City, this is their title to lose now. They have the upper hand. They have the advantage. So now it's out of Liverpool's control, and that's a little worrying as a Liverpool fan. And if you look at the social media of the Liverpool players, that draw they got against Everton, it was a hard-fought draw, I'm not going to lie, because it is against Everton, your Merseyside derby rival, and it's never easy going to Goodison Park and getting a result because you're so close to the pitch, or the pitch is so close to the audience. Yeah, it's very compact, so you're just getting roasted constantly by just the Evertonian fans. And they took this point and they thought, all right, I mean, it's a point. It's not a win, which is not great, but also it's not a loss either. So a point is least.
I actually thought they were going to lose because Everton – all right, we got to talk about Everton. Everton were fantastic this game. They played with a lot of emotion, a lot of heart, and it just looked like they wanted to upset Liverpool's season. That was their Super Bowl. That was their Premier League trophy, upsetting Liverpool's season.
And it was a very, like, non-Marco Silva-esque kind of game.
Yeah, it was very scrappy. It was super pressing. Everton pressed Liverpool a lot, and then it was just such a gutsy performance defensively for Everton. When they got in their block, they were up there taking blocks and everything, and Pickford had a very, very good game too.
Pickford had the game of his life compared to the last time Liverpool faced the blunder with Pickford chucking it onto the crossbar. But man, Van Dijk did make a he did make a comment at the end during his interview, post match interview, in that he roasted the Everton players for celebrating a 0-0 as if it was such a big result. It says a lot about the Everton players.
It does, but also it's, you know, with with the way Everton season has gone on, I don't blame them because it is your biggest rival. Why not take enjoyment of kind of ruining their season in a way?
Basically, yeah. They actually have, so I guess there is some victory for them there. But
So now that the game is done, I personally think it was a very entertaining Merseyside derby. How would you rate this one?
As a Liverpool fan, it was very frustrating because they just couldn't finish anything. And Everton, they didn't just sit down and just play defensive. They actually attacked Liverpool, and there were some opportunities where I thought,
Sigurdsson
had
a couple good chances. He slid in some good balls, and then he actually whipped in a good one, and then Cech Tosun was basically free, unmarked in the box, but he decided to volley it instead of taking control and hitting it.
That's because they're Everton, and they don't have, you know, a quality player that can think to, you know, take a touch.
And Richarlison was on the bench. Why would you start Theo or Walcott?
They also started Calvert-Lewin.
I agree with Calvert-Lewin. Calvert-Lewin played really well.
Or Richarlison?
I would say start Richarlison over Theo Walcott. I don't know what Theo Walcott can actually bring to the team at this point.
The pace,
but he really can't. He doesn't do anything besides run. That's the problem with him.
It's true. He's there to try to stretch Robertson and try to keep him at bay, but even then, he's not going to keep up with Robertson if Robertson makes a forward run. So, I agree with Yashin that he didn't really do much for the team, and that's why he got subbed off for Richarlison later on in the game, but man, this is just a very frustrating result.
Frustrating.
And we'll just have to see how Liverpool do for the rest of the season because they don't have that many other...
They play Tottenham, right?
Yes, they play Tottenham, but it's at home at Anfield. And the other games besides that aren't as, I would say...
They're all winnable, you would say.
Yeah, they're all very winnable games.
Like, so the pressure's really on Liverpool. They have to win out, basically. Mm-hmm.
Like, there's literally no excuse now at this point. It's like, oh, it was an Everton, or it was the Merseyside derby. Oh, it was the North England derby against Manchester United. It was a tough environment. But now, the rest of the season, they have the advantage.
They have to win. Mm-hmm. And then going into the Manchester United game, they beat Southampton 3-2. The goals in this game were amazing. If you get a chance to watch the highlights of this game, just watch the goals that were scored. The James Ward-Prowse free kick, the bullet
from
by
Valerie.
The bullet by Valerie. Pereira's insane golazo, upper 90. Lukaku's, both of his goals on the right foot. I mean, there was some great, entertaining goals for this one. Shout out to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, again, pulling out the victory out of his hat. I mean, that was crazy. Going into close to the 90 minutes, you know, when James Ward-Prowse equalized to make it 2-2, I thought I was like, oh, a 2-2 draw. But Lukaku came up big, and shout out to Lukaku. He's really stepped up since the injuries have taken place at United. He hasn't pouted or said anything. He just put his head down and worked, and you can really tell that he's been working on the training ground. And really good goal scored by him, so an overall really good result for United.
Yeah, I was very surprised in the quality of the goals. We were very spoiled in this match. From Valerie's just bullet from 30 yards out, and then...
Shout out to him. He's only 19, I think, and he's really, really, really played well as a fullback for Hasenhüttl right now.
Yeah, he's kind of came out of nowhere, too. He took over the job for Cedric Suarez. Suarez is now Inter Milan. I did not know that, but now he's the right back for Valerie's now the right back for Southampton, the starting right back. And there were some times this season where I thought he was a little rash, but if he's able to just basically rip long shots against David De Gea.
Yeah, I thought De Gea could do a little bit better, but even still, I think De Gea got a couple fingertips on it, but that thing was not being denied going into the goal.
So now I can see why they started him. At first, I was just like, why did they start this guy? But I guess now I know.
And I also have to point out for Hasenhüttl, Højbjerg did a really, really, really good job of being all over Paul Pogba this match. Paul Pogba, if you watch the game, couldn't really do much. He wasn't very influential in the game. It was basically Pereira that was doing more of the attacking threat and Rashford and Lukaku. But Paul Pogba was very, very quiet, and you could tell he was getting pretty frustrated because he couldn't really get the ball out. And every time he touched the ball, at least there was two or three Southampton players surrounding him. But really, it was down to Pierre-Emile Højbjerg just really putting in work in the midfield. And to me, he's a really fun player to watch because he's not going to do something crazy attacking wise, but he'll really put in the shift defensively, and he'll surround a player and do a very good job man marking people. So Hasenhüttl's got a great player there, and I think really with the bottom three kind of being solidified as it is, I think Southampton will get enough points to escape the season. And going forward, they have a very great manager that knows how to play with youth players and knows how to, you know, develop youth players. So I think they're going to be fine going forward into next season and then finishing out the rest of this season.
Mm-hmm. And then speaking about Højbjerg, he was a Bayern Munich product.
Yes.
Like, he was, there's a lot of promise in this player. And there are some times when Højbjerg can just rip a long shot every once in a while too. So he's a very, like, unpredictable kind of player. He's also very creative as well. So that's very good that Southampton is managing to help him prosper into the player that everyone thought he'd become.
Yeah, you know, Dusan Tadic was at one time at Southampton, but he's totally killing it at Ajax right mm-hmm. now. But it's crazy to think they had that much talent at Southampton, but couldn't really take advantage of it when it was there.
It matters who's on the team and what kind of tactics you have to set up your team. That kind of shows. But also, there's one player in particular I do want to highlight. That's Andres Pereira on Manchester United, because he was just one of those random, like, youth player buys that Manchester United bought a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, so actually he was there for quite a while, but there was that point in time where he was thinking about joining Juventus on a free contract because he wasn't giving the opportunities at United. But this season he's kind of worked himself in the first team because he's been out on loan in Valencia and a bunch of other teams in La Liga to develop his game. But he started the first couple games under Mourinho, then Mourinho benched him and he was kind of away from the team for a while. Then once Mourinho got sacked, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came in and Pereira was in, but Pereira made a big mistake against the Burnley game at home. And instead of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer kind of outcasting him, he said that he would learn from these mistakes and these mistakes would make him a better player, and it has. And what they realized too, I think the comments under Solskjaer was, they realized that Pereira is a much better player as a number six rather than playing as an eight in that defensive midfielder position. So they've kind of found a good role with where Pereira needs to be and being more, you know, forward, being in the attacking third. So he's performed really well, and he has the ability, as we just saw, to rip some nice shots.
Mm-hmm. It was like Coutinho-esque right
yes,
there, like
for
that
sure.
Finesse. And it came out of nowhere too, because when you watch the play before it happened,
Luke Shaw
making, yeah, a forward run, and then everyone in the whole stadium was like, oh, you got to pass Luke Shaw.
And he just decided to go for it.
He's like, no need.
no need. For it.
And then he just did it himself. And I was very surprised that he's actually thriving in the number six role, because if you look at the positions he's played previously at Valencia when he was on loan or when he just joined United and, you know, played in preseason, he was very much like a number eight or number 10 kind of player.
Yeah.
And that he was like a creative midfielder. Or one of those players like, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain, who just come in and make a run. But, man, because of United having so many injuries, he just filled that gap. And he's actually performing pretty well. So he's a very surprised player, in my opinion. Like, he's just turning up. And now he's making a pretty significant impact in the United team. Do you think he'll solidify his position as a starting player? Or once Lingard comes back and once Martial comes back, he'll be put back on the bench?
I definitely think I think he may have the potential to be a starting player, but I think right now, once the Herrera and Matic kind of come back, I think that will be the front. That would be definitely the midfield that you go for. But I think he's definitely proven that if given the chance, he can be there for next season. If, you know, once Matic kind of phases out and Herrera, will be there for the next couple of years. But he's definitely solidified his place in terms of being a nice bench player. And a player you can bring on, such as, not a super sub, but a nice, decent player to bring on sub, such as a McTominay. A decent player that can do the spectacular every once in a while, but I think he still needs to develop a little bit more defensively and just fill out his body a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. And that's saying something where he's like, oh, you have to, you know, work on your defensive thinking and your tactics, because he wasn't starting as a defensive player, but he just so happens to be now. That's kind of funny to say, but I think that's, you have a very promising player in Pereira.
For sure. And, you know, this kind of speaks about how good Solskjaer has managed this entire situation, the injury crisis at United. The fact that they've lost so many players and the fact that they're doing this and keep on winning. I mean, this is incredible, this run that he's been on. And he definitely deserves the full-time job. I think if he doesn't get the full-time job, I think it's an absolute shame. I want him to get the full-time job.
At this point as well, speaking as a Liverpool fan, just like a fan of the Premier League and just soccer in general, if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does not get the job, I'm going to be like,
robbery.
What do you have to do to get the job? It's kind of like Keita on the bench. It's like, what does he have to do to get into the starting 11 of Liverpool now? But, man, Solskjaer has been basically proving all the doubters wrong, like proving without really much expectations on him, he's just basically running away with it. I'm very surprised, honestly, at this point still.
And they keep on winning. That's the thing. They find a way to win, get a point, scrap a point. They just don't lose. I mean, it's just crazy because the mentality under the last two managers is, oh, let's be defensive. Let's try not to lose. This one, let's keep going and let's try to win. You know, it's always foot on the pedal 100% of the time. And his tactics have always worked out. You saw in this game he had to change it up. He basically had to go to a back three with Ashley Young playing as a back three along Smalling, Lindelof, and it was Young playing in that back three, so adding on Deloitte. And then Alexi Sanchez gets injured in that game as well, so he had to bring on Deloitte to kind of shoulder the load as the right winger. But speaking about Sanchez, I think he's done. I mean, I personally, another injury for him. United are probably going to go about and sell him for the summer. Unfortunately, it just has not worked out for him.
Who's going to buy him, though?
China.
China?
Someone in China.
Honestly, that could be the move. I don't know if Sanchez would want that move, but...
It's unfortunate. I really wanted him to work out, but he just has not done anything. Honestly, Mkhitaryan has done more for Arsenal than Sanchez is for United.
I agree. And it's not like Sanchez... It doesn't feel like he's trying as much as like
every time
expect.
He gets the ball, it's just you can tell his confidence is so low that he can't do anything with it.
Yeah, I think it's time to go, Sanchez. I mean, I've been saying this for a long time as well. I assume most people that watch the Premier League.
I think he's solidified now.
So, yeah.
Oh, man. But going on to Fulham versus Chelsea, this was a big game, a West London derby. New manager, Scott Parker, coming in for Claudio Ranieri, guys. Claudio Ranieri was sacked this past Friday. Unfortunately, you know, it didn't work out for him at Fulham. He tried everything to fix the defense, but as I keep saying, the defense is garbage.
Mm-hmm.
It is just, they can't defend. I don't understand. If you literally stuck six fans out there, I think they could have done a better job at defending than the defenders they have at Fulham. It's terrible.
I hope no Fulham defenders listen to the podcast, but if you do, I apologize. But I agree.
We've been roasting the defense pretty much all season.
Mm-hmm. Like Fulham, they have to be roasted. If you look at the statistics, they have the worst defense in the league. They have conceded the most goals. We've been comparing them to see if Man City's goal difference will be greater than their goals conceded, which is an insane stat to even compare to. But even in this game, Scott Parker, he was brought in as the new interim manager, potentially the next legit manager for
full-time.
Next full-time manager for Fulham. And this game was very open against Chelsea. I was a little surprised in that Fulham had many opportunities.
Yeah. And he played Sessegnon as a right winger. I don't think Schürrle was dropped to the bench. Ryan Babel, Mitrovic, and Sessegnon, which I think is good because Sessegnon was such a good player, you know, in the championship, and he just didn't really get a chance to really start that much in the Premier League.
Yeah, he was a young player of the year for the EFL Championship, so that says a lot. And he didn't really live up to the hype during this first season, but during this game in particular, if he could perform as well as he did against Chelsea, then I think he'll be the player that everyone's expecting him to become.
Mm-hmm.
But in this game in particular, Fulham had the opportunities to get a draw or get a result against Chelsea because there are many opportunities that Mitrovic had, and he put him on target, which is good. He just didn't put him in certain places where they were out of the reach for the keeper. Kepa Arrizabalaga, he got put back into starting 11. A little surprised by that, but...
Yeah, I didn't think that was supposed to happen.
It was not supposed to happen, according to most people that would think about the situation between Sarri and Kepa. But, you know, Kepa got put in right after Caballero had a pretty good game. And Kepa actually showed up because all these opportunities that Mitrovic had or just other Fulham players had, just one-on-one or just really good opportunities, they're just on target.
But Kepa
stopped
him. The saves.
Yeah, he came up with big saves, and he made the headlines for good reasons this time. And although he did concede one goal, that was because Chelsea was just poor marking on a corner.
Oh, such lazy defending. What were they doing? Callum Chambers was basically wide open in the box. I mean, what are they doing? Everyone got sucked in into the left side. Callum Chambers wide open on the right.
That's just Chelsea this season. And you can't even blame players like Marcos Alonso or David Luiz because they didn't start this game. They started
Emerson.
And they started Christensen, I believe.
Yeah, Christensen. So, he's the future. I'm glad Sarri actually gave Christensen a chance because with the transfer ban, they're going to need to play their young players. I want to see Christensen in the lineup more.
But I also think they started them as like a rotation because it is Fulham. It's not really
They're not world beaters.
Yeah, they're not world beaters. It's not a player that's like, oh, man, got to watch out for them. This is like, all right, we can definitely rest our starting players for this one.
But Higuain got a much-needed goal for his confidence. And then Jorginho a nice little pass into the goal. A nice little pass into the goal for that one.
His second goal of the season. But I will say that Higuain, I don't think he's lived up to the hype. And he's not been having a really good start at Chelsea. Because if you think about it, the only times he scored while at Chelsea... Yeah, where Huddersfield and then Fulham, the two worst teams in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So, although he got a goal, wasn't really saying much, but I think if Higuain can, you know, continue to become this, or continue the momentum, because he had a really good poacher's goal in this game, and if he can continue that momentum into the next game and the next game and just keep that, just scoring one goal, then he will make up for that. But for now, if he can only score against the small teams, it's not really that much difference from having Morata or like Giroud on the team.
And it is also what's scary about Fulham, going back to Fulham, they're most probably going to get relegated. There's just no way they can make up, what is it, 10 points, I think, now the gap is. You know, with 9 games left, it's just very unrealistic. But with Scott Parker and what this Fulham board have to understand is, it's what are they going to do? Because they have so many players on pretty high wages and pretty well-known players. They're not going to want to go to the Championship. I know Schürrle's on a 2-year loan, but I don't think they're going to want to pay his loan wages to be in the Championship. You know, they bought Sarri, you know, big money buy. Mitro's been there since last season, but there's a lot of players in there that I would not expect for them to keep going into the Championship.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't see, like, Sergio Rico going into the Championship. I don't see Ryan Sessegnon going back into the Championship.
Sarri going in there?
Yeah. I think they're going to have to, if they get relegated, which is projected they will, they're going to have to just fire sell everyone. It's going to be huge.
And that's scary because it's so hard to get into the Championship, to get back in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. It's been a process for Fulham to try to get back in, and it's been several years in the making. And now, if they get relegated, it seems like all their work is just going to be thrown away.
You know what's crazy, too, with Fulham? You know, most teams that kind of come up in the Premier League, they kind of keep their same core players. You saw that with Bournemouth, Burnley, Hull City, Newcastle. You know, even if the players are not the best, they still keep them into the lineup for the Premier League, and then they just add around them.
Mm-hmm.
But Fulham, they basically fire sold everyone when they got in the Premier League. Oh, we're in here, all the money. They basically went ham and bought everyone they could on the transfer market and then just stuck them into a lineup. Like, here, oh, they just assumed that, oh, we have like 5 decent players that were once really, really good. Why can't they just let us stay in the Premier League? But it did not work out. And it's just a big philosophy lesson for Fulham's board, is that you kind of have to stick with what was working for you in the Championship.
Mm-hmm. And also, this is going to be a big like red flag for other teams, because not only if they get relegated, they're going to fire sell everyone, but certain players, like, for example, Liverpool, they bought Shaqiri on a cheap because Stoke City got relegated.
Yes.
So now other teams,
their value
goes down significantly. So other
lose money.
Yeah, they'll lose a lot of money. And also, a lot of players will be sold on, like, a discount, basically. So certain players that other teams might be trying to get, like Ryan Sessegnon or maybe Mitrovic, they'll be on the market for a little cheaper than market value.
Yes.
So I think a lot of teams right now, like, particularly teams that are trying to help bring in the next generation, they're going to be looking into Ryan Sessegnon, looking into Sarri, and then be like, all right, if we'll get relegated, it's time to pull
the
trigger.
Even Ryan Babbo, you know, he could kind of fit himself into a – you know, a team that's kind of struggling to stay in the Premier League as, you know, a backup player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he could definitely fit a bench role at this point.
He probably could for, like, a mid-table team or something like that. But yeah, this could be very – for Fulham, this is a big, big issue they're going to be encountering.
You know, it's crazy. Both Fulham and Wolves love to play out the back and play really nice play. But what Wolves did is they kind of built around – their core players that played really well in the Championship, but Fulham never did that. And also, Fulham just doesn't have a center back. They don't have that leader, you know, that Odoi or that Sol Bamba. They just don't have that leader, that center back leader that can lead a defense, and that's what's really hurt them as well.
Mm-hmm. Wait, Odoi, the one on Fulham, is not really much a leader, but I agree with Yashin that the players they did bring in to be the leaders, like Sarri.
Oh, I meant to say Willy Bolly, my bad.
Yeah, Willy Bolly.
Willy Bolly or the other Wolves center back is crossing.
Connor Cody.
Yeah, Connor Cody.
Hey, Liverpool product
yes,
right there.
Yes, exactly.
But, yeah, there's not really a player in the Fulham team that came from the Championship that could be the leader for them. Like, everyone in the Fulham starting 11 it looked like majority of them were just players they brought in.
Yeah, Alfie Molson was at Swansea, and he was a terrible defender for them.
He was all right, but they still got relegated, so he's not really saying much. But, man.
Ooh. Tough times ahead for Fulham, basically.
Mm-hmm. And basically, as Justin and I have been saying before the podcast, they're basically, at this point, like Huddersfield, are toast. And now we're just seeing who will be that third team. Right now, it's just being solidified. But that third team, we still are predicting will be Cardiff at this point, who lost 2-0 against Wolverhampton Wanderers this past weekend. Basically, Cardiff...
Wolves goals were really nice. The
Wolves
second one
looked like Barcelona at some points
Jota
of the game.
Jota is playing really, really good stuff right now.
Mm-hmm. Diogo Jota, during the last season while he's the championship, he was one of the top goal scorers in the championship. And I thought that going into the Premier League, there will be a slight drop-off because the competition is significantly greater.
And he's taken a kind of a step back and let Raul Jimenez just take that striker role and let him score the goals. But let me be, you know, that provider and help you out.
But more recently, like, Diogo Jota has been scoring. Like, recently, a couple months ago, he got the hat trick. And then after the hat trick, he's just been like, all right, it's time to start scoring again.
That game was against Leicester, right? That 4-3?
Yes.
Yeah,
that
crazy game.
Crazy game. Good memory. But Wolves have actually been looking really, really good. And at home, especially at Molineux, they've won, I believe, last five games at home.
Yeah.
That's pretty big. So
I still remember the first game of the season when Wolves played. They just looked absolutely amazing. I think Ruben Neves scored a free kick that game or something of that nature. It was crazy.
We haven't seen a Ruben Neves insane goal for a long time. We need one of those back. But Den Donker, he also has been put into the starting 11.
And Doherty, he's been a really solid right back for them all
and
season long.
Yeah, we were expecting Wolves to, you know, be a
kind
pretty...
We didn't expect them to light up the Premier League. You know, they're best of the rest at this moment. You know, besides the top six, they're pretty much solidifying themselves as that seventh best team in the Premier League.
Yeah, I agree. And I didn't expect certain players like Den Donker and Doherty to be making such impacts as they would. Doherty has been there, but Den Donker in particular, he's kind of new. But they're making a pretty good impact, and they're looking like a solid team right now.
Something
you wouldn't expect from, like, a
newly promoted team.
Yeah.
What's crazy is if they solidify, get seventh place, and, you know, work themselves, if they get a chance to go in the Europa League, how are they, you know, what's really scary is teams that go into the Europa League that aren't supposed to be of the top six, they really struggle in the next season in terms of balancing Europa League and Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting to see what Wolves do in the transfer market if they try to get rid of, you know, Doherty, Connor Cody, or, you know, Willy Bolly and try to bring in maybe those high-profile name players. And see what happens. It's going to be interesting how they handle, you know, the extra competitions they might be in if they solidify themselves in seventh place.
Yeah. It will be difficult because you saw historically certain teams like Hull City or in this season West Ham.
West Ham a couple seasons ago.
Like every time they go into the Europa League, it's, oh, dang, this is a big opportunity for them. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, they're in the relegation battle now. And then all of a sudden you see Hull City get relegated. Burnley this season... We're in the relegation zone and in the relegation battle for so long, and then now they're starting to pick themselves back up out of it.
It's weird. You would think seventh place would be a really good figure, but honestly, it could be a curse. It could be a blessing. It could be one of those things where you want it really badly, but it just can bite you in the back if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I think what that plays into is just the club pedigree and also just the depth. If the team has the depth to perform in these competitions, like a Leicester. I think Leicester could do it. They did.
I definitely, you know what team I'm going to point out? I think Newcastle, given a couple extra players to buy with Rafa Benitez, could find themselves in seventh place next season if they're able to buy some players. Rafa Benitez, man, he's the best manager out of everyone besides the top six. He's a top quality manager.
And he's also used to these competitions and incorporating them into his regular season schedule, basically. While some of these other teams, they've never thought of going into a European competition. And then seeing Burnley there, like Sean Dyche is probably thinking, oh, I did not expect this, but let's see how this goes.
Ginger Mourinho. Oh, man, it's going to be crazy because when a team finishes in seventh place that's normally not supposed to be there, I think a lot of times the owners and the people in charge of the board and even the managers kind of get, you know, thick-skinned, thinking that, hey, we could potentially challenge for top four, Champions League, but they're not even close to the level of the top six. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times that influences how they buy players. And with West Ham, you saw after Dimitri Payet kind of led them into the sixth place position, they kind of went crazy and bought all these crazy players and thought, like, oh, this is our chance now to go to the top four, but it doesn't work out like that.
Mm-hmm. As we've been learning throughout the past seasons in the Premier League, you can't just buy a bunch of good players and expect for them to perform and actually, you know, repay what you bought. Most of the teams that I've been seeing and
have good managers, good structure,
good core, and also just they keep the core players that helped them be successful. And we see that in Bournemouth, because Bournemouth, they don't buy big players. They help develop the players they already have, and they buy players that are very...
Yeah, they slowly phase out the older ones, and mm-hmm. I think I've seen that. You know, other teams kind of just let them go, but you have to, I think it's more of a, you have to slowly phase them out of your team and then let the new players kind of take that leadership role.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not only saying that, like, Bournemouth keep the players that are successful in the team. They do bring in players like David Brooks in particular this season from Sheffield. And I was thinking, oh, this is just like
they,
a you know, completely random player.
Klein on loan and Solanke from Liverpool.
Mm-hmm. So he'd be very smart. Although it's very difficult to be like a Bournemouth right now. And it's very easy to be like a West Ham who just buys a bunch of players and then it's like, oh, well, they didn't turn out what we expect. But that's just mainly what we've been seeing in the Premier League. And a lot of teams want to become the team that, you know, buys low and then sells high, or just buys that next Dele Alli for just $1 million and then all of a sudden he's like a world-class player. But it's not easy with all these data analytics and scouting these days. So yeah,
it seems that everyone can find the diamond in the rough now. Yeah.
That's what made like Arsene Wenger so special back in the days. He was able to have this team of scouts and analytics and find that next big player before most other teams do. But nowadays,
everyone's got it.
You can just go on YouTube and it's like, oh, Frankie De Jong. Oh, it's like Hakim Ziyech. He's like, all right, that's the next big player right there.
But man, we're gonna see. I think I predict Newcastle can kind of finish in there because they have Jermaine Lachelle, Longstaff, Almiron. They just need a striker, and you know they've got. They've got their keeper in Dubravka, and they've got the manager. So they've got a core of good, solid players. It's just adding on to it. But that's another discussion for another day. But kind of rounding up the rest of the results, West Ham beating Newcastle 2-0. Crystal Palace beating Burnley, 3-1. Zaha scoring finally again, and Batshuayi scoring. And then Wolves, as we mentioned, beating Cardiff 2-0. So nothing really too crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Last result here, Watford-Leicester. Watford beating 2-1. The Brendan Rodgers-led Leicester. Tyler, could you tell me how Leicester played that well?
They showed great character. It was very good in terms of their effort. So I have to applaud them for that. If the game were to be, you know, judged based on the 5th minute to the 90th minute.
Or character.
Yeah, they showed great character, and then Leicester would have won. But unfortunately, because it's judged on full time, Leicester conceded in the first 4 minutes and also in the last 2 minutes, and they lost 2-1. These are things that Leicester fans have to get used to, as having Brendan Rodgers as your manager. He'll hype you up, and once you lose, he'll say, you know what, they showed great character, though, and on to the next one. And honestly, like most managers, that's all you could say, but this man is somewhat broken record.
Somewhat broken record. All right.
It's more of the same.
Well, kind of going previewing into the next week, obviously we got the big Arsenal United game, but I wanted to point out the Newcastle Everton game. I think this is going to be a nice little fun game to watch because Newcastle are performing well, and Everton just came off that big 0-0 draw against Liverpool. I don't think Everton are going to keep it up. I think actually Newcastle might end up winning 1-0. I think Almiron might score his first goal in the Premier League.
Ooh. Newcastle are home at St. James's Park against Everton. So I think both teams will be motivated going into this game. Everton especially, since, you know, they got the big result against Liverpool. Big result.
Big result. 0-0.
And Newcastle were coming off a loss against West Ham away. But Newcastle recently, with the addition of Almiron, have been doing a lot better.
Played so much better.
A lot better. But I will have to say, I think Everton will get one goal. So I'm going to say 1-1.
1-1. All right. And then we got Liverpool versus Burnley. I picked this one because Liverpool obviously need to pick up points and need to start winning games on the trot. At Anfield, hosting a decent Burnley side. A Burnley side that can cause a lot of problems for teams. But I think Liverpool can get things going. I think Firmino is going to be inserted back in the front three. We're going to see front three of Mane, Firmino, Salah. And in the midfield, I think we're going to see maybe Shaqiri.
Hopefully.
Maybe Shaqiri might play. So I think Klopp will just kind of go for it in this one, and I think it'll be a comfortable 3-0 for Liverpool.
So far, Firmino has been on the bench because he had an ankle injury recently during one of the games, during the Manchester United game. That was the same ankle injury that's been keeping him on the bench. And also, I don't know why Shaqiri's been on the bench. He's only played 18 minutes in the past five games, which is very low. And so far, we've seen at the very beginning of the season that he can be that impact sub. So
he scored a goal against United when he came on.
Exactly. So I feel like Shaqiri does deserve more minutes and more opportunities because, you know, Liverpool have been struggling to score. Liverpool are playing at home at Anfield. Burnley away are not very good compared to when they're at home at Turf Moor. So I think Liverpool will win as well. I don't think it'll be as comfortable 3-0, but it will be 2-0.
I think
2-0.
They need to win 3-0 because they got to get the goal.
They got to, but I don't think they will. So I'm going to say 2-0 win to Liverpool.
Okay, nice. You think Mane will just keep scoring?
Mane so far has been the man in form this past month, and I think we will find a goal from Mane, but the other goal, I don't know where that will come from. I just know it will probably be maybe Van Dijk, but I just know it will probably be assisted by either Trent Alexander-Arnold or Robertson. So.
All right, and then the biggest game, Arsenal versus Manchester United. United, Arsenal hosting United at the Emirates, a big game. Arsenal playing a little bit well, but United coming off that huge victory over PSG. I think the fact that they went into Paris, beat PSG 3-1, and won in aggregate, and is going to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, I think at this point they think they can beat anyone. So with Lukaku in the form he is, Rashford picking up that huge penalty, obviously the midfield's going to be with Fred, McTominay, and Pereira, or Pogba's actually going to be inserted back in there because he's back in the Premier League. Watch out, Arsenal. I think this may end up being ugly. I think United could win 2-1 in this one.
2-1?
Yeah.
It's not that ugly.
It's not that ugly, but I think it's going to be one of those games where the scoreline isn't going to tell the exact game of the story. Hmm. You know what? Let me change it. 3-1.
3-1. Oh.
Yeah, another 3-1.
All right. Well, I agree with Yush in terms of the number of goals scored. I think there'll be four goals, but I think it'll be split evenly 2-2.
Oh, 2-2.
Because Arsenal, you can't sleep on Arsenal right now because they have been doing very well. Although Manchester United have been pulling off some insane scorelines.
They
beat PSG. They came back against Southampton. And then they did get, you know, somewhat decent result against Liverpool, despite the situation. So, I mean, they're coming up all these strings of events. I don't see them losing. But also, Arsenal at home at the Emirates. Sometimes it'd be a very toxic place. But also, they're going off.
Sometimes can be a toxic.
Sometimes that's a bit of a lie. Most of the time. But I think Arsenal, they're on a high right now as well, so I don't see them losing either, so I'm going to say 2-2. Bert Leno had a very good game last week against Tottenham, but I don't know, Manchester United right now, just on another level.
They're scary, man, right now. Lukaku running at you. Lukaku's in this form. I think he could pull off something spectacular in this game.
And also, what Arsenal defender can really stop Lukaku?
Socrates at this point.
Socrates is going to get a red card at this point during this game.
Just don't rely on Mustafi. Oh man. But as we want to mention right here real quickly, both Tyler and I will be in spring break for UGA right now, so we won't have an episode next week. But be on the lookout for a Champions League episode because the international break will be coming soon for the Premier League. So that'll give us a chance to round up the Champions League results because there's some pretty big storylines going on in there for the Premier League teams. But that kind of does it for us for episode 27. Really appreciate you guys listening. Please make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And that'll be it for us for this one. See ya.
Peace.